We're holding on the top line of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We learned yesterday, now our Mishnah had said you have the case where a person stole food and then gave it to his children to eat, or we had where he left it over to them as an inheritance. So in both those cases, we said the children are potter from paying. So we were discussing why that is. We had Rav Chisda saying that it has to be after Yush. We had Rami Bar Choma saying that it's not a matter of Yush or not, it's a matter of, well it is, there was Yush, but in addition, also the Yoshim, when they inherit it, it's considered as though they bought it, so therefore now you have Yush and Shinu Rishus, and therefore they acquired that food or that whatever it was, and now therefore they only, and now therefore, so if it had been, so now therefore they don't have to pay, it would be the Goslin himself who has to pay, and now he's dead, so therefore there's nothing to do. On the other hand, we said Rav had said that no, a Yodish is not like a Lekeach. Rather, when we said in the Mishnah that he left it to them as an inheritance, does it mean it still exists or not? Rami Bachama says, yes, it still exists, but they're potter from paying because there's Yush and Shinu Rishus. Whereas Rav had said that no, we're talking about it no longer exists. It's already been eaten. So now, continuing on this topic, continuing on with what Rami Bachama had said, where again, he had said that he had brought the point, Rishus Yodesh, Rishus Lekeach Domi, that when a person inherits property, it's considered as though he bought it, and therefore in the case of the Gzela over here, you have Shinu Rishus, together with the Yush there was before. So now the Gemara says, Rav Adar Bar Ava, Masdi Lahod, Rami Bar Choma Aho. Rav Adar Bar Ava said that Rami Bar Choma's statement about Rishus Yodesh and Rishus Lekeach was referring to a different case. And the Gemara is going to discuss what about, according to him, would it also refer to the Mishnah? Would he understand that Rami Bar Choma understands the Mishnah the way we said, or maybe not? But there's a case like this. Suppose that a person during his lifetime collected ribis on a loan, and now he passed away and left the money to his children. Now, the rule is like this. We're going to learn in Bava Metzia in a couple of months, Rest Hashem, that when it comes to there's a difference between ribis shel Torah and ribis shel Divrehem, ribis daraisa or drabon. Where it's daraisa, then the Beis Din will make the malve return that extra amount. Where it's ribis drabon, as the various examples that we'll have in Perek Ezer Neshech over there in the fifth Perek of Bava Metzia, then they're not going to require him to do that. So now in this case it was ribis daraisa. So if he had been alive, he himself would have to return it. But in this case, he died and left it to his children. So even though the children know that this money is ribis, they're not required to return it. And therefore, Rami Bar Choma says, according to Rav Adar Bar Ava, here is where Rami Bar Choma is saying that you see that the Rishus Yerush is like the Rishus Lekeach, and therefore it's considered as though he bought it, and therefore, so, yes, the father would have had to pay it back, but they themselves, there was Yush, and there was Shinu Rishus, because the other person gave the ribis voluntarily. Well, maybe not, you know, they would have preferred not to, obviously, but they definitely gave it. It was included in the loan that they should give it, and they did that. So there is, and they don't expect to get it back. So therefore, there is Yush, and there is Shinu Rishus, because Rami Bar Choma is saying over here that the Yoshim are considered like a Lekeach, and therefore they're not chayev to, therefore they're not chayev to return. Actually, Tosfos wonders, what does that have to do with Rishus Lekeach or not? The fact is, he gave it to him voluntarily, so it was the Torah's halva, it went according to the rules of halva, not gzela. And the fact is, now it's a milval peh. There's not necessarily a written document, because the fact is, even if there was a document that says that ribis is to be collected, that document itself would be possible, because minat Torah, you can't charge ribis. So in that case, Tosfos says, well, who cares whether Rishus Lekeach, whether Rishus Yodesh to Rishus Lekeach or not? The very fact that you don't have a shtar over here makes it a milval peh, and then there was no gzela here in the first place. So of course they're not required to return it. And Tosfos says, nevertheless, it still would be considered a gzela, because after all, he's not giving it as matana, he's giving it as ribis, and if the money still exists, they would have to return it, but Because here you have, because they're Yoshim over here, and Rami Bachama is saying they're considered as though they bought it, then therefore they're potter from paying. So we see, therefore, so there's another example of there's another example of Rishus Yorish Rishus Lakeach, different than the case of our Mishnah. So Rava Omar, and just like before, when Rami Bachama had explained the Mishnah that way, Rava had said that and by the way, there is a point. There is a point. Rabbi Akiva Eger refers over here in Gilui Hashas to or not Rabbi Akiva Eger. It's my Rav Ransburg, rather, on the side over here, refers to one of the Mefarshim on the Rambam, Shara Melech, and Hilchos Malva Veloiva, which Hilchos Malva Veloiva was a few days ago in Shloisha Parakim of Rambam. So he discusses over there the point that this is all that this Tosfos is according to Rami Bachama, according to Rava, who we're going to say there's a different point over here that as Rava is going to point out, the father has a special chiyuv to return the money. It's Xeris HaKosev that he has to return ribis, which doesn't apply to the children, and therefore not necessarily the maskana, not necessarily for lahalacha would we hold of this concept that it is considered Xela. Maybe it is truly considered a halva, and yet we have the Torah is specifically saying, as Rava is going to say, that he has mitzvah to return it. Anyway, so Rava Omar, the same way as on the Mishnah when Rami Bachama had said that Rishus Yorish Rishus Lekeach Domi, and Rava had argued and said that in the Mishnah there's a different case, the same way over here. Also, Rava argues, Rava Omar, La'olam Emalach Rishus Yorish Lav Kirishus Lekeach Domi. After all, you could say that the Yorish is not considered like a Lekeach, it's not considered like he bought it. The shiny Hacha, it's different over here. The omakra al tikach meita neshach v'sarvis. The pasuk says, "Don't take ribis," and the pasuk continues, "V'chei achicha imach." Your brother should live with you. From which we darshin in that gemara in Bav Metzia, ahadulei kihecha de nechi bahadach. Return that money to him, so he should be able to live with you as well and not lose out the ribis. But it says v'chei achicha imach. With you, implying that you're the one who charged the ribis. Therefore, the didei kamazel le'rachmana, lebrei le'mazel le'rachmana. Therefore, says Rava, you can learn from that, the Torah is only telling the person himself who took the ribis that he has to return it, but it's not telling his children. So even if you say that you can talk about yish, even if you say that there's not shin and reshus over here, because the children are not considered to be a lekeach, it's considered, like we learned yesterday, brakara davor, they're like a leg of their father, and they're continuing him, but here, the fact is, they're not imach, they're not the ones who charge the ribis, and therefore, they're not required to return it. Doesn't prove anything, says Rava, that you should say that they're considered like buyers, they may not be. So, the Gemara points out, man demasni la braisa. So now we have two different things, a Mishnah and a Braisa. What was Rami Bachama speaking of when he said his concept of Rishus Yorish Kirishus Lekeach Dami? First, we had the Stamma de Gemara on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis that we learned yesterday, said it on our Mishnah about the case where a person stole and then left it as an inheritance to his children. And then we have our Braisa over here, which is referring to a person who charged ribs. So which one was he referring to? Man demasdin la'abraisa, the one, Rab Adaba Ava, who says that Rami Bachama is referring to the braisa, kol shekein amasnissin, how much more so he would say that Rami Bachama's concept of Rishus Yerush, Rishus Lekeach, would also apply to the Mishnah. Because after all, then here, in the case of ribis, we just said, Rava says there's a different reason to say that he should have to return the ribis, but his children shouldn't. And in the Mishnah, you don't even have that. And yet Rami Bachama would ignore that and say it doesn't matter. It's because Rishus Yorish, Rishus Lekeach. So all the more so in the Mishnah, where there's no other reason to pater them other than they're considered a Lekeach, then certainly Rami Bachama would explain the Mishnah that way. Man demasin lamas nisin. However, the Stamma de Gemara, which originally gave Rami Bachama's statement in connection with the Mishnah, then it would say, Avala Braisa, Rami Bachama, Karava Masnila, not necessarily would he say the same thing in the Braisa. There he may well understand that the way Rava did, which is that in this case of Ribis, you have a specific reason to say that they're potter from returning the Ribis because Vachayachicha Imach, but not necessarily would that apply to the So we would say in the Mishnah, we're saying they're kirshus lekeach, but in the Braisa, we would say that that no, they're not rishus lekeach, but you have the special thing of the cheach ichaim. That's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi brings a second explanation that has the girsa the other way around. In the Mishnah, after all, we could say that we're talking about that they ate the food, like Rava had said. In the Braisa, you don't have that. We're saying that they know the money is of ribis, meaning that the money still exists. So the other way around, we would say that the one who says that Rami Bar Chama is saying on the Mishnah, where even though you could learn the Mishnah as being where they already ate the food after they yashened it, and nevertheless, Rami Bar Chama doesn't do that and says that it's Rishus Yerushka, Rishus Lekeach, all the more so he would say in the Braisa, where the money still exists, that the only reason to part to them would be Rishus Lekeach. Whereas if we say that he's going on the Braisa, then we would say in the Mishnah, then he could equally well understand the Mishnah, like Rava, that we're talking about, that they already ate it. So Rashi says, I prefer the first explanation. Mind you, Hagoyz HaBach actually flips them around, both in the Mishnah and both in the Gemara and in Rashi, flips around the two possibilities, a Braisa and a Masnissin. And so he has the Girsa and Rashi the other way around, that that Rashi is saying that you have two explanations over here. The first one is what I heard from my Rebbeim. The second one, though, is the one that's the better explanation, where the second one would be the Girsa, the way we have it in the Gemara over here. That we're saying that if the key point would be that in the Braisa you have the alternate explanation of v'cheyach ichaimach, and in the Mishnah you don't have that. In any case, the point is that the point is that what Rav Ada Bar Ava is saying about what Rami Bar Chama holds on understanding the Braisa may or may not apply to the Mishnah depending on how you look at it. Next, the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan, Hagozel of Machos Bonav, a person steals and gives the food to his children to eat. So as the Mishnah had said, Pturin Milashalem, they're potter from paying. So they're potter from paying, as we said, the various possibilities why, because we said, again, we said according to Rav Chista, we were talking about where they were already miyayish, and therefore we have Yush and Shinu Rishus. And according to Rava, in fact, the second case of the Mishnah where they yashin it from him is also talking about where he ate it. Anyway, it continues the Braisa. He niach lifneim. What about if he left it to them as an inheritance? Then it depends. Now the Mishnah just said that they're potter. Now the Braisa draws a distinction. Gdolim, if the children are adults, chayovin l'shalim, then they have to pay. Then they have to pay back the nigzol. Katanim, but if they're children, and Rashi points out, according to Rami Bachoma, who was saying again that they're considered like a lekeach, he would have to say that we're talking about this is before Yirush, and therefore as Gdolim, they're chayav to pay Katanim, but if their father passed away when they're children, then they're Pturim Milashalim, then they're potter from paying, because even though Rashi explains, even though the Gzela still exists. Because we're saying he niach lifneim, he left it for them as an inheritance. But nevertheless, as we're going to discuss in the continuation of the Gemara, as ketanim, they're potter, and it's impossible for the nigzol to take him to Beis Din. Continues the Braisa. What about if the adult children say, "We don't know any calculations that our father made with you"? So in other words, we don't know. Maybe your father already arranged it with you and paid back the gzela. Pturin, then they would be potter from paying, says the Braisa. But the Gemara asked, what do you mean? B'shum da'amri einon yodin pturin. What do you mean? How can they be potter just because they're saying that they don't know? The fact is, they know that he stole. So now you have, it's a classic case of bori v'shema. The nigzol was saying that, the nigzol was saying, your father stole from me, and you should be chayev to pay. They're saying we don't know whether he paid back. So how can their Shema claim that he might have paid back? How can that override the din? How can that override his claim of body that he definitely is owed money? Now the Rosh wonders about that. He says the fact is almost at the end of the Masechta that the Bori Veshema may be strong enough to be machzik in money, but not necessarily to take money away from the other. And here we're talking about to take money away from them. So the Pnei Yeshua says, because You have the same. The fact is, there was a chazaka that the father owed the money, and therefore, so that kind of thing. Then bori v'shema, we do say bori odif. You have a classic case, for example, where a person say where Reuven says, "You owe. I lent you money," and Shimon says, "I'm not sure if I paid you back." It's called mechuyav shvuah. He would be chayav shvuah, but he can't take a shvuah because he doesn't know whether he can truly take a shvuah. And in that case, he has to pay. So this would be similar. And then also the Pnei Yeshua also points out, since the object is still here, so you also have another chazaka. You have Cheskes Morakama, it's called, the fact that there was a chazaka that this guy owned it in the first place. So therefore, so it's not even lahotzi, it's not even to take it away from them, it's more for him to be machzik in it. Anyway, so the question is that again, what do you mean? They're saying we don't know whether your father calculated, whether our father calculated anything with you, but how can that pater them from having to return it? The answer is Amar Rava Hachi Kamar. No, what the Braisa actually means is the other way around. Gdolim Sha'amru, when the children are adults. So we said ordinarily they would have to return it. But if they say, Yoidim Anu Cheshbonis Shechishev Avinu Imach, we know the calculations that our father made with you, that he already arranged to return it to you, V'lei Poshloch Gabei, V'lei Midi, and you don't have anything left that he owes you, Turin, then their potter. Because now at this point they have a migri. They could have said we returned. Tosafos points out they have a migri. They could have said we returned it, or they could have said, let's say for example, Tosafos says you could have a case where there's no edim to begin with that there was a theft. All we have is their hadar. So then it's almost like a pesha also a pesha hitter, and therefore they can be potter when they say yes, he did steal it, but we know the calculation that he made with you. We know how he figured out how much he owes you and paid it to you, and therefore we should be potter. So in that case, the Torah Chaim points out, the fact is, the Braisa had said, Einonu Yodin, it means like a rhetorical question. Einonu Yodin, Cheshbonus, Shechishav Avinu Imach. Do you think that we adult children don't know the Cheshbonus that our father made with you? Don't try to be collecting this Gzela again when he already paid you back. So then we believe him. Okay. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa. Hagozel Machel Bonav, a person steals and gives the food to his children and they eat it. Turin Milashalim. So then again, they're potter from paying, as we said in the Mishnah. He niach lefneim. What if he left it to them as an inheritance? V'ochlum, and they ate it. Now we learned before, according to Rava, that is exactly the case that our Mishnah is talking about, where they're potter, because we're talking about she'ochlum, and even though they're not considered a lekeach, but nevertheless, because they ate it, then therefore they would be potter. So according to Rava, then our Braisa is saying exactly what the Mishnah had said. But in addition, also, the implication is only because they ate it. So the Mishnah says, so the Braisa says, Bein Dola, Bein Ktanim Chayovin. So whether they're adults or whether they're children, they're going to be, they're going to be Chayav, whether, because they ate it. So what it means is, Rashi says, it's like this. If they actually ate it, then they're potter. But he niach lefnehem. But if he left it to them as an inheritance, and then later on they ate them afterwards, then even though they're ktanim, whether they're gdolim, because when they inherited it, it still was be'ein, and therefore it's still considered in the reshus of the owner, then therefore they would be chayev. Now, Rashi points out, we're going to have soon in the Gemara, we're going to have at the bottom of the Amud, we're going to have a machlok, a sumchos in the chachamim, about whether we can be machayev children, for such a thing. So fine, the previous Braisa went according to Sumchus, which is why it said the children are potter, the young children are potter, or Braisa is going according to the Chachamim, so they don't contradict each other. But the question is, anyway, Ketanim Mimachayvi, the question is, how, even according to the Chachamim, how can young children be chayev in for the fact that they ate it? How, lo yehei el da azik azuki. Consider it's no different, let's say, than the case where they did a hezek. Now we learned previously in the eighth parak of our Masechta, we learned on Daf Pei Zayin, we had where it said over there that cheres shoyt of a cotton pgiyosan ra, that you're in a bad situation if you tangle with a cheres shoyt of a cotton, because if a cotton causes hezek, then he's potter from paying. So by the same token over here, if they ate it, they're ktanim, so therefore, so you can't be mechayev them anyway. So what are you saying? What are you saying that they're chayav to pay? How can you be mechayav them? Forgetting a moment for the about the question of whether we can be mechayav, whether we can take them to Beis Din as children. The fact is, if a child does a hezek, he's potter. The answer is Amar Papa Hachi Karma. So the Papa says what the Braisa means is he niach lefneim va'adayin loy ochlum. We don't mean that they ate it already. We mean if he left it to them and they didn't eat it yet. Now whether they're adults, whether they're adults or whether they're children, they're going to have to pay it back because now it still exists. It's true that if they ate it and they're children, they would be potter because practically speaking, you can't be machai of them for their hezek, but we're not talking about that. And before also, when Rava had said at the beginning of the parak, that the Mishnah is talking about where he left it to them as an inheritance and then they ate it, would be in a similar vein. Because they ate it, therefore they're potter. But if they hadn't eaten it, then Rava had learned over there they would in fact be chayiv to pay back. Rami Bachoma, who had said before that Rishus Yodesh Rishus Lekeach, and therefore it's considered already as though they bought it, and you have Yush and Shinu Rishus, he would have to understand, he would have to say that our Mishnah agrees more with the previous Braisa and not with this one, apparently. Okay. Another case, Omar Rava. Suppose that the Yoshim, their father left them a cow that he had borrowed. So their father had borrowed a cow. Now he passed away, and they still have the cow. So now they can continue using it for the entire time that he was supposed to borrow it. Ordinarily, for example, a she'ela is for 30 days. So he borrowed the cow for 30 days. 10 days in, he passed away. They still have another 20 days that they can use it. Mesa. Continues Rava, if the animal dies during that time, in chayavin ba'insaha, they're not chayav in the onus of it, because usually, of course, a shoyl is chayav in everything, including an onsin, but here, they're not the ones who actually borrowed it, and they didn't accept the shmira on themselves, so therefore, they're not chayav in the onsin. What about if they mistakenly thought that it was their father's cow? So like this, if they knew that, and by the way, as far as that in chayavin ba'inseha, so the Rashba actually points out, it means, so even if they used it, nevertheless, as Rashi had said, they hadn't accepted achrayus on it, but they would be chayav b'gneiva v'aveda, because at the very least they're no less than a shem asachar, because after all they are getting the benefit out of it of using it, and therefore the Rashba learns they would be chayav for gneiva v'aveda. Anyway, continues Rava, kisvurim shalaviyim. What about if they mistakenly thought that cow belonged to their father, the tavchu of achlua, and they shechted it and ate it? Now, it's considered in effect like an onus because if they had known they're going to have to pay it back, they wouldn't have done that, obviously. Therefore, it's considered like an onus. Now, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta makes a point which we've discussed a few times, that when we say Adam Mord La'olam, a person is always Mord, whether B'shoigig, B'mezid, or whatever, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta learns out where it's an Oinus Gomor, where it's 100% Oinus, then in fact a person is Potter from being a Mazik. And here they had no way of knowing, so therefore that would be why we can't be Machai of them completely over here. The Ramban disagrees with that and says that the reason is because in a certain sense it was B'rushus. In other words, it's not a matter of onus, it's a matter of they're not even called a mazik, because they're not even called a mazik. It's not like they had any intention of doing any kind of hezek, and therefore you can't be mechayev them as a mazik. Nevertheless, mishamim to me bosa bezoil, what they do is they pay the cheap value of meat, which means they pay two-thirds the price of it. That's a general rule. We're going to have examples of it in Bava Metzia as well, where a person eats something that they didn't know wasn't theirs, and therefore we have different. We're going to have a case over there in Bava Metzia and Hamafkid. We're going to have a case involving a shomer where there was a bit of an onus over there, and the rule is in such cases, then we assess the amount they have to pay is two-thirds the value of the meat. Something along the lines of Mefoshim explain that
If a person was, suppose a person was able to find in the store meat that's being sold at a 33% discount, then he would buy it even if right now he doesn't need meat. So the same way over here, we would say that they wouldn't have shechted it if they had known, but nevertheless, there is a certain there is a certain degree of awareness to the extent that we can say that therefore we can tell them, look, if you had found meat available at this price, you would have bought it, and therefore and even if right now you don't need meat, then therefore now we can be mechayev you the same amount. Okay, continues Rava. We said if their father left them achrayus nechasim, if their father left them land, which you can pay at which they can pay the debt out of, chayavin l'shalem, then they're chayav to pay. Now that last statement, ikad masni la aresha, the ikad masni la asefa. Some say that last point that Rava made about achrayus nechasim is referring to the resha about the case that they're potter from onus. So we're saying that ordinarily they're potter from onus, but we're saying if their father left them karka, they are going to have to pay because the nechosim already have a shibud from when their father was alive. Meaning that Rava would say that the chiyuv of onsin already is from the time of she'ela. It goes back to the time of when he borrowed it, and therefore, if we say that, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second what the implication of that is, the ikka the masin la sefer, others say that statement about if their father left them land is referring to the sefer, the case where they didn't know that it was borrowed and they shecht it and ate it, where they paid dmei bosa bezoil, where if their father had left them land, then they wouldn't just pay dmei bosa bezoil, two-thirds the value, they would actually pay the entire value because then they stand in place of their father. Now that you have a shibud on the karka, they stand in the place of their father, and therefore they would have to pay the whole thing. So manda masnila reisha kol shekena sefer. The opinion that learns that Rava's statement about achrayus nechasim refers to the reisha would say all the more so on the sefer. So even in the reisha, where it's only a matter of there was an onsin, they didn't do anything wrong at all. It was a pure onus that the animal died, and nevertheless, we would still be mechayev them to pay if there's achrayus nechasim, all the more so if they mistakenly shechted the animal, that they would also be chayev to pay the full amount. And in that case, opliga did a papa, in which case, then it means that Rava's din would disagree with what Rapapa is going to say on the next line. Whereas if we say that din about achrayus nechasim refers only to the sefer, only the case where they shechted it, where there was a degree of negligence over there because they should have found out whose cow this is before they shechted it, and then Rava is saying if there's achrayus nechasim, they're required to pay. Avala reisha loy, but that opinion would say that in the reisha where it died normally, then no, we wouldn't require them to pay even when their father left them karka, because there's no we wouldn't say the onsin are so much the responsibility of the shoyel until they actually happen. And the fact is, by the time it happens, the shoyel is long gone because he passed away and they didn't accept the chrives. In which case, according to that way of looking at it, what Rava is saying agrees exactly with what Rapapa says. Namely, Rapapa says a din, suppose a person had a cow that he stole before Shabbos, the Tovcha b'Shabbos, and then he goes and shechts that cow on Shabbos, then he's going to be chayev to pay the Tashlum Abba b'Chamisha. What happens to Kom Lebe the Rabbi Minei? Why don't we say that the fact that he's chayev Misa for breaking Shabbos patters him from paying the Tashlum al Baba Chamisha? No, Shekvah chayev b'gneva, kodim shiyovah, the day Isur Shabbos, because he was already chayev for the gneva, because he did that before Shabbos, before he ever came to Isur Shabbos. So Rashi points out the Tashlum al Baba Chamisha is a knas, and a knas is a chidush, Rashi brings, based on a Gemara and Ksubas, that knas is a chidush where you don't say the rule of kom lebe d'rabbi minei. When it comes to knas, we still say that mesu mashalim, he's going to be executed for breaking Shabbos, but he's also going to have to pay the tashlum abba v'chamisha, because the gneva itself took place before Shabbos. On the other hand, continues Rapapa, ho sapara sh'ulaloi, And the point is also that one. The point is also once he stole it before Shabbos, then already he's yeah. So even though the tvicha takes place only on Shabbos, nevertheless he's still chayev again, like we said, because of the knas. On the other hand, he's supported sheulaloi. But on the other hand, if he borrowed the cow, the tovcha b'Shabbos, and then he shechted that cow on Shabbos, potter, then he would be potter from any payment at all. Because now the Isser of Shabbos and of Gneva come at the same time. It's not really Gneva, it's Gzela, but whatever. The point is that the all of that comes at the same time, and therefore now he's Potter because of Kom Le B'Dirabamine. What happens is, in other words, that so Rashi explains, in other words, like this. As far we don't say the point is that the point is Rav Papa is saying we don't say from when he borrowed it then retroactively to then he's chayiv in the keren and therefore that's completely in his rishus. No, we all say only when he shechted it, only then he did gzela, and then you have the issur of Shabbos and gneva come at the same time. Now what happens is therefore Rashi explains as far as the keren kom lebe the rabbinay, as far as tashlumi abav chamisha. You know, there isn't because this is only the Ganev himself, but he was not a Ganev. He's actually considered a Gazlan. In fact, Rashi goes on to say, if he was a Shomer Chinam, then we could talk about that he was a Ganev, but the whole concept of Ganev doesn't apply by the other kinds of Shomerim because they're all Chayev and Gneva in the first place. This that we learned in the previous parak, all the dinim we talked about when the person has to pay kefal when he's toyin tainas ganav, all of that refers only to a shomer chinam. It doesn't refer to a shomer sachar or any of the other shomim, including in this case a shoyol. So therefore, there's no gneva over here. In effect, what you have here is gzela, and by gzela, you don't pay tashlum abav chamisha. And as far as the keren that he should have to pay for that, he's potter because kom lebe d'rabim. The point being, in other words, that we see. From what Rav Papa is saying, that we don't say that his chiyuv that begins as of when he borrowed it, only when he actually shechts it. So then again, according to now when we said before that Rava was saying the possibility that now when the children yarshin the borrowed animal and they whether they're chayiv and onsin, and what happens if they shecht it, so that will bear on what Rav Papa is saying. If we say that Rava says they're potter from onsin always, even if their father left the money, and only if they shechted it are they chayiv to pay at least dmei basa bezoil. But if he left the machrayus nechosim, then they're chayiv for the entire thing. Then that would fit exactly with what Rav Papa is saying, because now when they shechted it is when they're considered a gazlan on it, and now therefore is when they become chayiv. As opposed to we would say onsin their potter from, just like Rav Papa is saying that here we say that the chiyuv of onsin doesn't come from when he borrowed it; it comes only from when the oina, so in this case, the shechita happened. So that again, one version of what Rava is saying would agree with her papa. The other version saying that they'd be chayiv to pay regardless, even for onsin, if their father left them karka, would disagree with her papa. Rashi also mentions over here that there was a girsa over here in the Gemara that said im ein tvicha im ein gneva ein tvicha ve ein mechira, which we learned earlier in the Masechta when we were learning the seventh parak Merubah, and talking all about the dinim of tashlum abal chamisha. We mentioned sometimes that you have the concept that sometimes a person is potter from paying the tashlum abal chamisha because there was no gneva there in the first place, because for various reasons where he's potter from the gneva, and therefore we can't make him pay for the tvicha or mechira, because then if we subtracted the fact that he's a ganev and we subtracted the kefal, then you're not going to have, like this, you have to have four times for a sheep, five times for an ox that you have to pay, and if you subtract kefal, then you don't have that. Then you have three times for a sheep or four times for an ox, and the Torah is not saying that you do that. So Rashi says there was a girsa that had that in the Gemara over here as well. However, Rashi points out that it doesn't really fit. It doesn't really fit in our Gemara over here, because the fact is he's a shoyl, and he's a shoyl. And again, we said the whole concept of ganav doesn't really apply to him, because the whole concept of that he could be potter when he claims that a ganav stole it, and that if not, that he pays kefil, does not apply to a shoyl, because to begin with, if a shoyl comes and says it's stolen, he's anyway chayev to pay. He's anyway chayev to pay the keren. So Rashi takes out those words over here in the Gemara, there is actually the Rashba brings from the Raiva. There can actually be a case. You can have a case where the person claims he's not a shoyl. He says he's a shoyl mechinam, and therefore, and then he claims that he's potter because the animal was stolen, and it turns out that he was a shoyl. So that would be one way of entering that girsa. And then you also have that the Rambam also brings in this connection the point of ein gneve, ein tvicha, ein mechira. So why does that fit over here? So there's a couple of explanations among achronim what the Rambam would hold about that. The Rambam could hold, the Shach explained that the Rambam could hold that in fact when he shechts it and when he takes it and shechts it knowing that he's not supposed to, then in fact he does become like a ganav. And then also the Chazon Ish gives an answer. It's not just if he had just claimed that it was stolen would be one thing, but here we actually did a Maisa, and therefore he can be considered a Ganav. So those would be various ways of inferring this Girsa, which Rashi rejects. Okay. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, V'heshev es egzeila asher gozal, ma tamid loy ma asher gozal. The Pasuk says that the person has to return the gzela that he stole. What is the pasuk adding with the words asher gozal? Of course, gzela is something that he stole. It means yachzu ke'en shegozal, means he has to return it in the way that he stole it. Meaning, if the gzela still exists, he has to return it. But if not, then he doesn't. So that means, now obviously that doesn't mean that if he himself is still alive that he should be potter from paying at all, because it's not Kayim anymore, therefore it refers to the children. Based on this, they said what it says in our Mishnah, that if he stole it and gave it to his children to eat, then they're potter from paying. But if he left it to them as an inheritance, then as we brought one of the brises earlier, we said whether they're adults or children, and they're going to be chayev to pay because it still exists. However, the Gemara says, Mishum Sumchos Amru, they said in the name of Sumchos that no, Gdolim Chayev and Ktanim Turim, if they're adult children, then they are in fact chayev, but if they're children, if they're young children, then they would be potter because the fact is they're children and you can't be men and you can't be mechayev them. Not so much. Now, we said before, there is the point that if children cause a hezek, then you can't be mechayev of them, but this is something else. Here they didn't call the hezek, the gzela still exists, but there is the point, the Gemara is going to say over here, that you can't take children to Beis Din, and it's considered as though they're not present because they don't have das to be standing in Beis Din and to argue against them. So according to Sumchus. And this is when we had before Brisas. We had one Brisa saying that Gdolim Uktanim Chayovin would be according to the Chachamim, whereas when we had one that said Gdolim Chayovin Uktanim Turim would be according to Sumchus. So the Gemara tells a story that bears on this about listening to Eidos when we're dealing with a child. Bar Chamur to Rabbi Yirmiya, the brother-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiya. So this brother-in-law was a cotton Torek Gali ba'apei to Rabbi Yirmiya. He one time closed and slammed the door in front of Rabbi Yirmiya and wouldn't allow him in. What happened was that there was a house that this boy had inherited from his father, Rabbi Yirmiya's father-in-law. Now Rabbi Yirmiya, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, had a reason to claim that this house actually belongs to him. So he wanted to come in and make a chazaka on the house. So the boy slammed the door and wouldn't allow Rabbi Yirmiya in to go and make that chazaka. Also, came to Rav Avin. So Rav Yirmiya came to Rav Avin for a din Torah. Omar, so Rav Avin says, what's the problem? Shaloi hu tevea. The fact is, he yarshins his father. He's claiming on behalf of his father that he's yarshining from him. What do you want from him? Omalei, so Rav Yirmiya says, v'homai sinasadi da'achziki be'bachaya da'avua. I have edus, though, that I had a chazaka on this house for 3 years while the father was alive. And this is called Chazaka Sheyesh. So he's claiming, Rashi explains, that the father had given it to him, had sold it to him or given it to him. Now we're going to learn in Bava Basra, months from now, Be'ez Hashem, that you have a chazaka has to be accompanied by a taina. It's not enough, for example, to just say, well, I was here for a couple of years and nobody bothered me, therefore I have a chazaka. You have to have some basis for that chazaka. For example, that I claim that I bought the property or was given it as a present and now I don't have the shtar anymore, as we'll learn in Baba Basra, Be'ez Hashem, later in the summer. But in any case, now Rabbi Yirmiyah has that. He's saying, I bought it from their father, who gave it to me as a gift, and I have chazaka 3 years while the father was still alive, so therefore I should have the rights to it. So why is he locking me out of there? Amalei Rav Avin says, yeah, but you're talking about bringing Edim, b'chim akabim Edim shaloi b'fnei Baal Din. Since when can you listen to Edim not in front of the presence of the Baal Din? And a cotton is considered as though it's not in the presence of the Baal Din because he's a cotton and you can't have him in Beis Din. He doesn't have that kind of das. So Rav Yirmiyah says, v'loi, why not? V'alkatoni, we just said a b'raisa, b'ein d'rlim in k'tanim chayovin. We just said that when the children inherit from their father, even if they're k'tanim, we make them give back the gzela as long as it's b'ein. So then in that case, we see you can take children to Beis Din. Amalei, Sir Rav Avin says, well, fine. Harei machlokes sumchus betzidach. The fact is, right there, though, you see that sumchus says that. But you see the chachamim, you see the chachamim disagree. He tells him the fact is, he's saying, so Rav Yirmiyah is arguing, in other words, the chachamim say that he's chayev, that even ketanim are chayev. So Rav Avin tells him, yeah, but you see that Sumchus says they're potter. Amalei, Rav Yirmiyah says, Ichba kula alma v'koi k'sumchus. What are you going to tell me? Everybody is going to the tircha of following Sumchus lafku and the didi to take away my rights. The fact is, Sumchus is only a das yochid. Yochid v'rab malacha k'rabim. So then I should be able to bring my edim, and it doesn't matter, according to the chachamim. It doesn't matter that they're ketanim. You can see, we don't say, ein makabim dinus, ein makabim edus, not in their presence. It's considered like they're present. You're telling me Sumchus disagrees? Okay, Sumchus disagrees, fine. But the chachamim say that, and why shouldn't I be able to... And why shouldn't I be able to take him to Beis Din and bring my Edim and be able to get the property? So the matter rolled on. Eventually, one person told another, and eventually the whole case came to Rabbi Bohu. Omar, so he says, Lo shmir l'chu hodr Rabbi Yosef b'chama Omar Rabbi Oshia. Haven't you heard of the din that Rabbi Yosef b'chama said in the name of Rabbi Oshia? Rabbi Yosef b'chama is Rava's father. The Omar Rabbi Yosef b'chama Omar Rabbi Oshia. Tinek shetokaf ba'avoda v'yored l'sach sodesh o'chavei, right? If a child grabs his avodim and goes into somebody else's field. So Rashi has two explanations. One, that it means he took his avodim in order to give some muscle to be able to take over the field. The Ravid points out it would have to be that we saw this take place. Otherwise, again, as we said, if you can't accept Adris in his presence, then how would we know it happened? But we mean that he did it in the presence of Beis Din, let's say. And he says that the property is mine. That's Rashi's first explanation that we're talking about, that he used his avodim to go and take over the property. Rashi's second explanation is he grabs a hold of avodim that were not known to belong to him and says that they're mine. Anyway, Rabbi Yosef Achoma says, "Ein oimim namtin ad sheyagdil." We don't say in that case, well, we need to wait until the child grows up and then we'll take him to Beis Din, because after all, the other guy is suffering a loss right now. We take it away from him now. When he gets older, then we can bring the aid. Then he can bring the edim, and we'll see whether there's any validity to his claim. So Rabbi Bohu says, by the same logic, this cotton is claiming this house. We shouldn't allow him to hold on to it until he gets to be a gadol, and only then can Yirmiyah bring his edim. We should require him to give it back right now, and later on, when the child gets older, then if he has proof that contradicts Yirmiyah's and says that the property did belong to his father till he passed away, then yeah, he could take it back over. But the Gemara says, me dummy, how do you compare it? The difference is, hosam hu demapkinin mine, do like kaimalaya chazoka da'avua. The difference is, in the case where the child goes with the avodim, whether again we're talking about he uses the avodim to take over a piece of land, or whether we're talking about that he takes over the avodim themselves, either way, He doesn't have a chazaka that it belonged, that we know that it belonged to his father first. But not in this case where the cotton has, after all, a chazaka that he yoshened it from his father, because it's, we do know that at one point this house belonged to the father. Whether Rabbi Yumi bought it from him or not is the question at stake over here. So it wouldn't necessarily be the same kind of thing that we should say that we take it away from the child and give it to Rabbi Yumi, and only when the child gets older, will he be able to go to Beis Din and put in a claim to take it back? Not necessarily is that the case over here. Which means, therefore, Tosfos says that in this case, then in this particular case, the boy locked Rabbi Yumia out of the property. But Tosfos says actually the same thing would be even if Rabbi Yumia was in the house. Nevertheless, since the child has a chazaka d'avahosa, he has a chazaka that the property at one point was known to belong to his father, then nevertheless, we would still say that the child's chazaka from his father overrides Rabbi Yemiya's proofs. With that said, though, the Pnei Yeshua says that no, it would still have to be at least that the child threw him out of the house. If Rabbi Yumia is actually living in the house and the child says, yeah, but I have chazaka d'avahosa, you should take that out, then the Pnei Yeshua says, no, we're not going to do that. Now, that's all according to Tosfos. Hagois Oshri, the notes in the Rosh, bring from Rabbeinu Tam that no, if Rabbi Yumia was already living in the house, then no, it wouldn't help, then the child wouldn't have much of a claim. What we're saying over here is, because he wasn't in the house yet, then therefore we say that the chazaka d'avahosa overrides that. And the difference is that the case that we're bringing over here from the where the child takes the avodim and takes over a field or takes over the avodim themselves, we say the difference is over there that the point is there's no chazaka d'avahasa at all, whereas here there is. But the fact is, he still couldn't necessarily throw out Rabbi Yumia. So here Tosfos is saying that given what the Gemara is saying now, it wouldn't matter even if Rabbi Yumia was living in the house. But according to Hagois Oshri and other Rishonim, it's not so. And if Rabbi Yumia was living in the house, then in fact the child's claim wouldn't have any validity against him. Okay, let's talk more about this din of Eidos not in the presence of the Baal Din. So the Gemara says, Omer of Ashi, Omer of Shapsoi, Mekablin Eidim Shaloi Bifnei Baal Din. You can listen to Eidim when the Baal Din is not present. Unlike what we were just saying. Tohi bar Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan wonders about that. What do you mean? V'chi mekablim edim shaloi bifnei Baal Din? How could you do that? How could you listen to Eidim for one side when the other side is not present? An interesting point over here, by the way, is Rabbi Yochanan, we know, was one of the earlier Amoraim. Rav Ashi is one of the later ones. How is Rabbi Yochanan wondering about what Rav Ashi is saying? So on the side over here in Masoras HaShas, it brings a couple of possibilities. First of all, there are Mephoshim who say that there may be, sometimes we find in the Gemara, a Rav Ashi who deals with earlier Amoraim. They call him Rav Ashi HaKadmon. So there may be, there's an earlier Rav Ashi who's not as well known in the Gemara. He's not the same as Rav Ashi, the compiler, together with Ravina of the Gemara, but you may have him, and that may be the Rav Ashi we refer to over here. Or the other possibility is there are a number of Mephoshim who have the Girsa Rav Ashi, a Rav Ashi instead of Rav Ashi, and in that case, then fine. Rav Ashi was in Rabbi Yochanan's time, and Rabbi Yochanan could be wondering about what he says. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan is wondering, how could you do that if the guy is not there? Then how can you listen to Edim against his claim when he's not even there? And the Gemara says, Kibla minei Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. So Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina accepted that argument from Rabbi Yochanan and said, it's true, but you can have a case. Suppose that the one who wants to bring the Edim himself is suppose that the Baal Din himself is sick. Who we mean by that, whether we mean that it's the Teveya or the Nitva is sick. So it means, in other words, so one way of looking at it is it means the Teveya, the Rosh, brings that if the Teveya is sick. So he's saying, I might die soon. I want to be able to take care of this matter before I die. Then, and after all, I need to remind the Edim. I need to remind the Edim of what it is that I want them to testify about. So then that would be a valid point, and we could say that in that case, we'll make an exception, and we can accept the Edim not in his presence. On the other hand, the Rosh says that no, if it's the other way around, if the nitzbah, if the one who's being sued and based in, if he's sick and he can't come, and therefore the other guy says, yeah, well, let's just get this over with, and we'll listen to the Eidos, not in his presence, then no, we can't do that. So if the Teveya is sick, then that would be an example where we could accept the Eidos when he's not present, or the Eidim are sick and he wants this taken care of as soon as possible before they die, and then his Eidos is gone. Or the Eidim want to travel overseas and they're not going to be available to testify after that. And that Beis Din sent a summons to the Nitba and he did not come to Beis Din. So all those cases are cases where Rav Ashi's Din would be that you could, where Rav Ashi's Din would apply, that you can listen to the Eidim even though the other guy is not present. But otherwise, then yes, Rav Yechanan has a point that you can't do that. Now, what does this mean? Tosfos brings that the Ri says that it means it goes with one of the other things. The Teveya is sick, or the Eidim are sick, or whatever. And in addition, they also sent a summons to the Nitba, and he didn't come to Beis Din. Because otherwise, if it's just that they're sick or whatever, but nevertheless he's willing to come to Beis Din, that wouldn't be a valid reason to accept Eidos until he actually comes. On the other hand, Tosfos says that that Tosfos discusses back and forth and says maybe not necessarily. Maybe in fact it would be enough. Because maybe it would in fact be enough that they sent him a summons and that's enough already, and then they can be makabel the Eidos when he's not present, even though nobody's sick or anything like that. And then the Rosh brings maybe only in the case where they're going to Medina Sayam when it comes to sick people. Look, a person can't control when he might die, so then it doesn't matter whether the Nitba is willing to come as soon as possible. We can still accept the Eidos as soon as possible before we lose our opportunity. But if they're going to Medina Sayam, we tell them wait another day or two, let the guy come to base. Continues the Gemara. So Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel Mekablim Edim Shalei Bifnei Baal Din. So again, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that you can listen to Edim when the Baal Din is not present. Omer Ma'ukva L'Yidim Efarshalei Minei De Shmuel. So Ma'ukva says Shmuel personally explained to me what he means is going to Poschalei B'Dinei. They already began the Din Torah and now the guy is ready to bring his Edim. V'Sholcholei V'Lo'Asa, and they sent a summons to the Nitba to come. And he didn't want to come. So then we tell the Teveya, go ahead and bring you Edim, even though the guy isn't present. Aval like Poskole B'dinah, but if they haven't even started the Din Torah yet, Motzi Omer Le, then the Nitba can say, you know what, I don't even want to go to this Beis Din. I know the Beis Din at Godel Azilna, I would prefer to go to the great Beis Din, meaning, let's say, the one in Eretz Yisrael. So he would have the ability to say, I don't want to be judged in this Beis Din. And in the first place, I want to say that. Now Tosfos points out the Nitba might be able to say that. The Teveya certainly can't do that. Otherwise, the Teveya can't say, look, if you don't pay this money, then we're going to have to go to the Beis Din Agadol Shel Eretz Yisrael, because that would be almost like blackmailing him. If you don't pay me, then I'm going to make you go on a long trip. But then Tosfos says that maybe not. Maybe even the Teveya maybe could do that. On the contrary, you could say maybe the Nitba is trying to evade things, and nevertheless we're still allowing them to do that. So how much more so the Teveya? And Tosfos discusses various possibilities as far as that. One thing is Rishonim point out, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that when we say over here based in Agadol, we don't even necessarily mean the great based in Eretz Yisrael. Any great based in of a certain time, any based in which is widely accepted that this is a great based in, a great Rav of our time, is considered a based in Agadol for this purpose. And there's different other understandings among Rishonim when you can say that here maybe we're not talking about a loiva, maybe we're talking about a different other kind of tria. So that would be a case where when the Nitba says I want to go to the great Beis Din and the judgment hasn't even started in this Beis Din yet, then you can't require him to come, and then you can't say that that we should be able to listen to the Edim when he's not present. So the Gemara says, "Yihachi ki poschle nami." So what? So even if they started the Din Torah, Motzi Omale the Beis Din Agadol Azilna, can he say in the middle, "I would rather go to the Great Beis Din"? And the answer is no. Omer Avina, going to knock at diska would be based in agado. And we're talking about that he actually has a letter from that Beis Din HaGadol that they told the local Beis Din, you have to judge him. Don't say let this guy come to us. No, you have to judge him where you are in Bavel or wherever it is. So there's no question then of going to Eretz Yisrael, because the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael themselves explicitly said that we don't want to take jurisdiction over this case. You have to judge it over there. Don't let this guy get away with any excuses or whatever like that. Okay. Talking more dinim about accepting eders when the Baal Din is not present. So Omer Rav, Mekayim is a shtar shaloi b'fnei Baal Din. When it comes to kiyum shtaris, you have a shtar where there's a concern that maybe the shtar or the edim or whatever is forged, and therefore you need to verify the edim's signatures in any of various ways. You have the edim themselves come to Beis Din and validate their signatures. You compare it with signatures that are on file. You have other people come and give eders on it, whatever. You have five different ways of doing it. So that, Rav says, you can do that shaloi b'fnei Baal Din even when the loiver is not present. Because there it's just a matter of being Mekayim the Shtar. It's not a matter of saying that he's going to use that Shtar to collect. But here, Rashi explains again that the Edim want to go to Mdinasayam. So then the Malva brings them to Beis Din before they leave to testify on that. And then Beis Din writes a certification on the Shtar. Tosfos actually disagrees. And says, wait, you said before that even the Eidos themselves can be done in a case like that where they're going to be going overseas, you can do that. Shaloi b'fnei Baal Din. So Tosfos says, no, it doesn't matter. Even if they're not planning to go to Medinas Hayam, the whole concept of Kiyum Shtoris is only Dirabanan Midaraisa. We say that when the Eidim are signed in a Shtar, it's as though they've already been cross-examined and based in. So the whole concept that you need a Kiyum is only Dirabanan. So therefore that we can do even when the other Baal Din is not present. That's according to Rav. Rav Yechanan, Rama Ein Mekayim Nes Ashtar, Shalai B'fnei Baal Din, whereas Rav Yechanan would say you can't do that. And Tosfos explains, he would say that the Chachamim are not going to distinguish between Kiyum Shtaris and Kabbalas Eidus. If you can't do Kabbalas Eidus in the presence of, not in the presence of the Baal Din, except in the circumstances that we said above, then the same thing would be as far as Kiyum Shtaris, Rav Yechanan would say. So Rav Sheshes says to Rav Yossi Bar Abo, let me explain to you what Rav Yechanan's reason is. Why would he say that to be Mekayim the Shtar, you need the other Baal Din present, Omakra, because the Pasuk says, but sure, you warn the owner and he didn't watch the animal, implying Omra Torah Yavi Baal Asher V'yamid Asher, right? The Torah says the owner of the Shur has to stand there and be present when they warn his Shur, when they warn him about his Shur. So in the same way over here, the Baal Din has to be present when they're bringing Eidos against his claims. Now, in that case, then, if we're saying that you learn it from a pasuk, then how do we have all the exceptions that we said before? So the Rashba draws a distinction, because after all, there we're talking about Misa. When it comes to Misa, fine, it's not Misa of a person, it's Misa of a shur, but still, that would be reason enough to say that you can't do that unless the guy is present. But when it comes to Eidos on Dinei Mammon, we're ordinarily going to say that, but we can make the various exceptions that we said before, where they're about to die or where they want to go to Medinas Hayam, etc. And the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Hilchasa Mekayim is a Shtar Shaloi B'fnei Baal Din. The Halacha is like Rava over here. You can be Mekayim the Shtar even if the Baal Din is not present. So the Malva or whatever it is brings a Shtar to Beis Din and the Edim come there and testify, yes, these are our signatures. So you can do that, says Rava, even when the Baal Din is not present. Even if the Loiva is standing there and crying out and saying, don't, it's forged. Nevertheless, we still do the Kiyum. And the point is, he's claiming that it's forged. Fine, you want to claim it's forged, then fine, you bring some proof to that effect. But right now we're going to be Mekayim the Shtar based on the Edim that we have. He says I have other Edim who are going to contradict them. Fine, when you bring your Edim, we'll deal with it. But right now, not. On the other hand, if the loiva says, give me time, and don't be Mekayim the Shtar and allow the guy to start collecting from my property until I bring Edus or Marana le the Shtara, and I'm going to show that the Shtar is in fact forged. Then fine, naktinenle, we give him that time, we give him the time he asks. E also, also, if he brings them in time, then good. He brings them, and then we check them out, and we see what the situation is. Eloi also, if he doesn't come in time, naktinenle bahab, then we wait for him a Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday, because those are the days, Monday and Thursday are the days that Beis Din sits. Eloi also, and if he doesn't show up during that time, then we write a shtar, we write a document of nidui against him for the fact that he's not paying off his debt, because here then we see that he's just stalling. And we wait the tishin yoimin, and we put up nidui on him tishin yoimin for 90 days. What happens? Why dafka 90 days? Tlosin kamoy lenachsin lenichsei. This was all in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam a few days ago, by the way. That Rambam gave the entire order of collecting a choiv, and a major part of it comes from our Gemara over here. So for the first 30 days, lenachsin lenichsei, we don't go into his property and start looking over what the malveh is going to take. De Amri, because we said Katorach Bezuzi. During that 30 days, he may be trying to raise money for it. He may be trying to borrow money for it. The Nizof, he's trying to find somebody who will be willing to lend him. So therefore, we're not yet saying that he's defaulted on the loan completely. Mitzioi, the next 30 days, also we don't take any property from him. We still don't go into his nechassin. De'omar, we say at that point, fine, in 30 days he couldn't find anybody to lend him money, but he's going to try to find somebody to that he can sell something else of his to raise the money back. And basroi, the last 30 days, we also don't go into his nechassim. Because we say maybe during the second 30 days he found a potential buyer for some property of his, but now that other person himself needs to raise the cash to be able to buy it. So therefore, that's why we give him 90 days. So we give him 90 days. Loi also, if after the 90 days he doesn't come, kasvinan adrachta an nichsei. Then we write an adrachta, which is a shtar that we give to the malve, or to the person who's owed the money, whatever, saying that you have the right to go look for property of his that you're going to use to collect the debt. Why it's called an adrachta, different rishonim give different reasons, where the word adrachta can be from the word derech, as in like stepping, like he has the right to step into the property and start finding what he can take over. Another possibility is the word adrachta comes from the word hidrich, also, and we find in Tanakh, means to chase. So it means like either we give him permission to go chase after properties and go find ones that will go to him. Now all of this applies only if the loiva to begin with had said, I'm going to come later on, then we give him the 90 days. But if to begin with he says, I'm not coming, I'm not paying attention to your summons of the Beis Din, and then we right away write the shtar, or he says, I don't have any way to pay, and then there's no sense in waiting 90 days because I'm not going to be able to borrow money, and I'm not going to be able to sell anything. Then we write the adrachta right away, because then there's no reason to wait the 90 days. Now all of this only applies when it was a matter of he owes money because he borrowed money and now he can't pay back. But when it was a pikodin and the other guy is saying, where's my pikodin? And he's stalling, then no, and we write an adrachta right away because it's meant to be spent. So it's reasonable that he may have spent it and now he doesn't have the money, as opposed to a pikodin, you're supposed to hold on to it. He has no business losing it in the first place. And for that matter, actually, when the Rambam brings this halacha, the Magen Mishnah points out that by a halva, the malva has to realize, look, because milva loitzah nitna, it may take time to raise the money, as opposed to a pikodin, he figures as soon as I'm going to ask for it, normally I'm going to get it back. So we don't give the 90 days. Now when we write an adrachta on mekarki, we write it only on karka. Avla metalkeli loy, we never write an adrachta on metalklin. Because the malva may go and grab and eat or consume all of the metalklin, and then when the loiva does eventually bring us edim that show that the shtar is forged or that there's otherwise a problem with it, he won't be able to find anything to collect. because all the metalpalin is gone. Now, obviously, the Rashba points out that would only apply only if he said to begin with, I have Edim, to contradict the Shtar. If he doesn't claim that he has such Edim, then there's not necessarily a problem of allowing the, there's not necessarily a problem then allowing the Malva to collect from metalpalin as well. The Rambam mentions, by the way, in a few places, at one point there was a Takonis and Gaonim that said that that you can collect from metalpalin. So in that case, then this din of not collecting from metalpalin, because the guy may end up using them up before he has a chance to prove that the shtar is no good, then that may not necessarily apply so much, because nowadays we can collect from metalpalin. Continues the Gemara. However, if the Malva does have land, then we could write an adrachta even on metalplin, because fine, even if he ends up using up all the metalplin that he took as in payment of the debt, and now the loiva proves that the shtar is forged, and therefore he's entitled to it all back, he'll be able to get it back from that land, no problem. However, the Gemara says Veloihi, but that last detail is not so. Adrachta am metalpalin lekasvinan. We never write an adrachta am metalpalin. Afagav the islam karka, even though the malva does have karka, chashinan shematachsif, because we always have the concern that that karka might get ruined and might not be available for the loiva to collect from. Continues the Gemara with this dinim of collecting a debt, v'chikasvin and adrachta. Once we write the adrachta, medinimle, we have to inform the loiva that the adrachta has been written. And now, by the way, at that point, the Rambam also points out, at that point, we also take away the nidui, because the whole point of the nidui of 90 days was to force him to do something about it. Now that at this point, we're at the point of collecting from him, then we don't need that nidui anymore. So we have to inform him. Vahani mili de mikra, but only if he's close to where the Beis Din is. Avol mirachat, but if he lives further away, loy, then you don't have to inform him. The imirachat the ika krovin, but if he lives far away, but he has relatives who can come and inform him. Inami ika sheyauta da'azli va'osu hasam, or there are regular caravans traveling back and forth. Mashina la treser yachi shata. Then, if necessary, we wait with writing the shtar adrachta even as much as 12 months. Until those caravans come back and forth in order to inform him that meanwhile he'll have a chance to come. In other words, we have an example. There was a guy Mar Acha who was owed money by somebody else, and the loiva didn't live in town, so Ravina waited 12 months before he wrote the adrachta. Because the loiva lived in Bechoizoi, and it took a long time for caravans to go back and forth, so therefore they had to wait that long to write the adrachta, so that the loiva would know that in fact it's been written, and not say, wait, I still was on my way to Beis Din to prove that the shtar is no good. However, the Gemara says Veloihi, that's not really a valid proof. Hosam inish alima hava. In that case, Mar Acha was a strong, a tough guy. He have a mati adrachta liyode, like have a efshalah pukimine. If he had gotten an adrachta and he had gone and taken over property, it would be very difficult to get it back from him if the loiva proves that the shtar is forged. Aval hocha, but when you have a regular person, where yes, he might take the property using an adrachta, but then it turns out that it was all false, that it was all based on a forged shtar or something, then no, loy natrin and lay, we don't wait that long, because we always have a way of undoing it. If with the adrachta he takes property and it turns out that in fact the original shtar choyv was forged or whatever, then fine, we'll easily be able to take him to Beis Din and get back that property and give it back to the loy. So therefore, so loy natrinim lay, we don't wait that long. Ella ad ozo shlicha betlos b'shabsa v'osa ba'abar b'shabsa, only if the guy lives close enough that the shliach Beis Din can go on Tuesday. So the judgment took place on Monday, because Beis Din sits Monday and Thursday. So Tuesday they sent out the shliach. And he goes and informs the guy, you should know this judgment doesn't default against you, and they're about to write an adrachta. But also by Baba Shabsa, and the loiva then is able to come on Wednesday, or Lacham Shabsa Koi B'dinah, and Thursday then he'll be available for the Din Torah. So if he lives, in other words, within 2 days, within if he lives close enough that he can be in Beis Din 2 days later, then we wait until Thursday to write the Adrachta. But if he lives any further away, then we don't wait any longer. We just write the Adrachta, unless, as the Gemara said, unless it was like the example with Ma'acha, where he's a very tough person, and once he's very rich and influential and whatever it is, and once he gets something in payment of what he claims is the debt, it's going to be very difficult for Beis Din to force him to give it back. Then we'll wait with writing the Adrachta until later in order to give the loiva a chance to show that the shtar is forged or whatever. Obviously, again, only if the loiva is making such a claim that I'm going to prove that the shtar is forged. Otherwise, then there's no difference. And we'll continue in the Gemara Beis Hashem tomorrow. We'll talk about more dinim, about collecting choyves and about Beis Din procedures and such things.